I didn't fly it, so it flew me.
That's a long flight, man.
I just sat there and let the other guys up front do all the work.
Well, that's good.
That's what I always tell my aging parents. And they're, fly on the airplane. I'm like, Dad, you don't actually have to fly it. You just have to sit there and drink the little bottle of Virginia Gentleman and chill out. That's what you need to do. Nobody's going to ask you to go to the cockpit, so you really can relax.
That's true.
I don't know. Okay, whatever.
Hey, really, if the plane's going down, what are you going to do to fix it?
You can't fix it in now.
Kind of there at that point.
That's right. It's like,
once that door shuts, you're theirs.
It is funny with particularly with elderly people, and it's not me. The elderly people is really funny because they're like, well, something could happen. I'm like, Dad, you're 90 years old. You made it to 90. You've already beat the odds. I mean, what the hell are you worried about?
That's right.
But if you're 90, it still feels like you want to make 91. So, pretty sure that's how it is for people, right? In general,
I just want to make tomorrow.
That's right. Tomorrow.
Let's just not get carried away here.
Nice high.
What is the musician? Rob.
Set your goals.
Who's the musician? He's like a little between. He's mostly rock, but a little country. Rob. And he has
rock. Talking Donny Marie here.
I was just gonna say Donny Osmond.
No,
it's not Rob Zombie. That came to my mind.
Rob Thomas.
Lead singer.
Rob Thomas has a song that's like one day. Closer to not dying young? Is that what it's called? Or
One Day Further?
From Dying Young. One Day Further from Dying Young. It's a great song. And it's basically like, hey, I made it one day further from dying young. So I'm I'm doing what I'm doing. It's a really cool song. Look it up, listen to it. It's a great song.
Coles.
So anyhow, but it's so true. Speaking of that,
that's a transition.
I want your update.
Speaking of dying.
Only update. How'd it go?
Oh, it actually went really well. The trip was far too short. I contemplated not coming back, but...
From Bermuda. First time in Bermuda.
First time in Bermuda.
What was the weather like?
It was actually really windy, like 35 to 40 mile an hour winds. It was overcast, which was really good for running.
Okay.
Sun came out a little bit, which was nice, but it was really nice.
That sounds good. From Hamilton?
Yep.
To...
So we did Front Street Mile, which was just a mile. Then we did a 10K around kind of the North Shore area.
That's cool.
The full marathon was basically around the northern part of the half was around the northern part of the island. And then the full, which I didn't do, was from Dockyard up and around.
That's really wrong.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That sounds like a real blast. Does anybody do a half and then the marathon?
No, the half and the marathon are on the same day. Around the same time. So you have to do, like I did the challenge, but I just did the half challenge.
Yeah.
You can do the full challenge where you do the mile, the 10K, and then the full.
Very cool.
Be lazy like me and just do
half. That's a beautiful place.
Oh, yeah, that's lazy.
Be lazy.
Slacker.
Yeah, be lazy.
She just did 10K and a half round.
Yeah.
Did you win?
I did not, but I was with two people who won in their who placed in their age groups.
Nice. Congratulations.
There's a reason why she didn't win.
I don't know.
All along the trail.
There was rum on the course. What was I supposed to do?
Rum on the course.
Now that's new.
You got to remember the Royal Dockyard there was the dockyard from which the British ruled the colonies for centuries. That's where all the military might of the Brits were that went into Jamaica and the U.S. and the colonies. Man, that's where all the stores. And that's where the rum came through. The Pusser's rum was the British, the official British issuer was Pusser's. And they had big stockyards, barrels and barrels full of rum in Bermuda. So
still a good place. They still do rum.
A little less.
That's really great. So we have anybody on the phone?
No.
Okay.
All right. I wasn't sure if Pete was going to join.
Well, I appreciate you all joining me here today. It's great to be here today. I don't appreciate your weather, but I appreciate being here. It's actually good to get a little brisk. Come back. We complain in California when it gets a little chilly.
It was 72 days ago.
That's what I heard. It was really, really very nice.
Doesn't know what it wants to do at the moment.
That's a winter here, right? It's the way it goes. So anyhow, just wanted to get together and get a chance to chat, do a little round table here. I know you've been spending time with Mr. Morris. I know you've been spending time with Mr. Bonney and trying to keep the wheels on and keep things running in Mr. Ferraro's absence. And I feel pretty good about that, I think, overall. But I just wanted to kind of get a chance to get together while I was here. Amidst all the other things on the slate, and kind of talk through it. And I think we have some other stuff this week. We're going to go through some other sessions and meetings. When's our security? When's our security meeting? Are we in
this
hour?
Yeah, yeah, actually, right after this.
And we're going to talk. Are we going to talk?
I am not on the docket.
You're not on the
Simmons.
I'm thinking Simmons. You're not.
Yeah, I am not.
Okay. All right. We'll get you in.
I have skated off for the day.
We'll get you in another time. That's really great. No, but that's good because Sim is a little bit relevant as we head to the end of January on the downhill run. So we'll talk a little bit about that too. So I was thinking maybe what I do, because I want to go around the table and let everybody have a chance to say whatever you want to say, but well, not everything you want to say, but relevant to our topic that you might want to say. Just a couple things thematically that as I sit back in the last week or so, couple weeks actually, as I think through this, that are sort of important, and I think that'll be important as we go forward. And I want to start by saying I think we're doing some really good work here. I mean, I really think we made tremendous progress on the platforms we have. I think to some degree we make great cheese, but a lot of it looks like Swiss cheese. And we still got some holes in places that we need to fill, right? So, and let me talk a little bit about kind of my headset about going forward and some things I like to think through. And Mike and Jeff and I are going to talk a little bit. I want to see us have more of a strategic roadmap of where we're going and where we're investing. And I kept trying to squeeze that out of Phil, and I could never get it, okay? I feel like we've been doing a lot of really good work. I think we've done some awesome project work. I mean, when you really look at platforms, tools, initiatives, even all the compliance work we've done, the policy creation work we've done, there's some really, really good work that's been done there. I feel like it's coming in buckets full of project-like initiatives, and we haven't synthesized this through kind of a time-based horizon. And actually, I thought it was pretty cool what you guys put together last week on the document for the audit committee, mm-hmm. where you extrapolated NIST from the initiatives and did some nice mapping in there.
That's actually part of about a 13-page deck that a lot of the people around this table and some others have been working on.
And really good.
Once it's done, that'll be the genesis for your strategy deck.
That ability to start mapping and plugging in needed capabilities into the larger delivery and what we can do for the business is really going to be good. I think it's going to be powerful. It's really, in security, it's really hard to articulate that. You know, do a big complex supply chain initiative, people do what? Okay, I reduce material cost, I reduce cycle time and turns, I reduce mean cost of delivery, you know, blah, blah, blah. I have things like, it's harder in security to measure success. Because what you're really doing is reducing risk in a very hard to quantify fashion. But it doesn't mean that you haven't materially reduced the risk. You have, right? So I want to be able to get that. We're going to talk a little bit before I go Friday night. We're going to talk a little bit about what does that look like? How do we build out that longer range model? But there are a couple other things here, too, I really want to do. Because I think we're making great progress on the project level initiatives. I want to go back and make sure that we've deployed the tools we've deployed completely and effectively, okay? And you guys have heard me go off several occasions now, and this always drives Pete crazy, I know, when he's on the phone or in the meeting. You know, I'm just so frustrated with where we are with DLP. I can just scream, okay? Swiss cheese, right? It's not that we don't have a platform. It's not like we haven't done some things on part of the platform. Okay, but we've got agent deficiencies, and so, you know, whether it's a Mac versus a, and then we've got areas where we've pulled back on the rule sets because we tried to use the rules too broadly. We realized the platform couldn't support IP rules, but it could support a, you know. So now we're not running our financial rule sets through the DLP, right? It's maddening to me that we're not in a better place after several years. Okay, I'm not saying it's any person's fault. It's just, gosh darn it, we pay for the tool. And I'm fine throwing that sucker over the transom and getting another platform. I mean, we decided to do that with Sim. Okay, I think a really good move for a variety of reasons. We got to get that figured out and then go back to core rules. You know, we certainly need to get PCI data. We need to get Social Security number to get the good old the usual suspects in there. I don't think we're ever going to protect from IP exfiltration with the DLP, right? I think you need UVA, you need other solutions for that. But we have tools. The SIM project's a huge project to displace that and become fully functional again like we were with Splunk, right? We've got a new UVA platform we got to figure out how to exercise. It's like my triceps. I don't think they've ever gotten any real exercise until the last year, and I'm like starting from scratch. But tricep push-ups are very painful. I think we got to develop some muscle memory around these platforms, right? So as much as I want to do on that forward-looking roadmap and strategy, I want to go buy a CASB tool. I'm not going to go buy a CASB tool until we got the other tools deployed effectively, and that means, are we kind of done to a level, done to a level of satisfaction? We think we're comfortable with that. Now let's go make the next investment, and let's make sure we get the people to support it. Because the biggest problem I have with buying another tool is, you know, we're going to be spread so damn thin from a skills and resource level that we won't be able to own it. Not to mention the hugely complex project you have, right, which touches every freaking application in the corporation. So I want to make sure before, and I'll be the first one to tell you, you know, we're stuck at a B plus or an A minus, or however we want to rate it with our NIST mapping chart to the numbers, which I think is really helpful. You know, if we can't get there and we're fixed with a number of people and we've got other impediments in the way, even though we're at risk with, you know, cloud-based data, potential exfiltration, it doesn't do any good to buy a tool and then not use it and think that we're okay. Well, I bought the tool and we've deployed it, so I must be fine. Bullshit. We don't even know what we're looking at. We're not using that to map potential data objects that are out there. So we need to do a look at this and say, if we can finish this thing, we can move an FTE over here, and that FTE can then move into this new space. I don't know where we are on that. I have no visibility into that today, right? And that worries me. Because the last thing I need, and I had a discussion with Samantha just before this, and I said, I feel the same way about the governance and compliance piece, right? We only have enough resources to do a certain number of audits and a certain number of compliance checks per year. And maybe the model is, with the people we have, the talent we have on the team, and just the quantity of people to look at this stuff, we can do, you know, we can help 3 BUs for some certifications, we can do 8 audits, and we can do this other interstitial work, and that's what we can do with the team. Beyond that, it's no mas, okay? Can't do it. So if the business, if sales comes back and says, no, you need to do a third audit for BOA, I go, time out. Which other audit do you want to take off the plate this year? Well, I don't want to take any off the plate. Okay, then how many contractors and how much money are you willing to spend for this audit? Because we're going to have to bring in contractors. And by the way, we can't triple up in the second quarter, so that audit has to wait till at least the third quarter. And that's what we can do. Well, we don't like that answer. Well, tough shit. Okay. And by the way, I can't give up, I can't necessarily give up an audit that allows us to continue to do supply chain or manufacturing work. But I can give up an audit to do for a bank that they've asked for specifically, because that's a revenue play. You guys think you can't get the sale without the audit, then pay for the audit. Mm-hmm. It's nothing. It's just a discount, right? That's all. There's a further discount level by where the money comes from. So I want to be able to build out a couple of meaningful models around how we're going to operate so that people don't feel like they got to work all weekend to keep up with what they're doing. People should work hard, but not... I don't want people going, there's no way, this is a hopeless job, I'll never be able to keep up. We ought to design for success, and when we do the stuff, we do it really well, okay? So I think that's what we need to do a little more of. The same thing you guys heard me talk about it, those of you who were on the last Monday call, which isn't always Monday, but the weekly security review, on our quarterly pen test, I want that same, I think everybody's lined up, and we'll talk more about that. 4 quarters. Each of those pen tests has a set of 8 or 10 things we have to do, starting with what are we looking for, who's going to contract, writing the contract with Nandy, CrowdStrike, Verizon, whoever. You know, what are the waypoints on that? What's the midpoint review, the final write-up, the findings that creates the artifacts that flow into ServiceNow and the things we got to go fix? Okay, we're going to do that 4 times a year. How many people? Comprehensive. Do we have, are we designed for success that the people on the team can do that? Understanding that the fixed items will have a tail on them, right, through time. Some of them might take a long time if we got to get the business to agree to change that process. But we ought to be tracking them with a really professional PM level at that as we go through time. So those are the things that, that I really want to see us make some progress on, because I think we've got incredible talent on the team. I think we've got really, really smart people from an event, from a forensic kind of what's going on level. And I want to get more organized and disciplined about those other, about those other kind of pursuits, so we get more, more mechanistic. Because we kind of done a lot of the blocking and tackling. I mean, there's still a couple big projects, but we've done so much work to get to this level. It's kind of now we need to look at how we're doing the work and how we're going to do that in perpetuity. I'd like to think that our, if we really can keep up a cadence for quarterly pen tests, and we think we're really not going to have, we're going to average three a year and do them super well and remediate the action items, then that's fine. Can that run for the next 3 years with the headcount we have? Or is there something fun? Well, we can do it three quarters and we're all going to be exhausted and two people are going to quit. Well, that doesn't sound like a good model for the future. So what? How should we design this thing to run well, right? So I think we've got to get to that kind of cadence to really get to the next level. And I'll try to put those into some thoughts into four or five things I'd really like to see us get a little more disciplined at. And then the other thing I'm going to do, as we go and look for Phil's successor, I'm going to get somebody here. I'm going to get somebody with some IP, code development, engineering company experience. You all don't need somebody who sits on a high throne and looks down. What you need is somebody who gets this stuff and how it's done, right? I don't see us going and hiring a CISO from a big bank or a pharma company. It's interesting. I had somebody send me a note the other night. He said, hey, goodness, friend, you should be talking to this person. They were at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I know them, and they're great. I'm like, non-starter? They may be the best person on the planet, but I'm sorry, but I don't think Blue Cross and Blue Shield people are going to understand what Octavian delivers or what Yancey delivers. And I don't want this to be on-the-ground training, on-the-job training for somebody, right? We need somebody who comes in and goes, I get box ship IP engineered software product in the friggin' complexity of a bunch of young gun engineers who think that they're God's gift to the world and they're writing code, leaving artifacts at AWS and all over the place and S3 in the cloud. And they don't, if you don't understand how that works, how can you do this job?
I was going to say, a CISO with DevOps and cloud experience, I don't make Derek thrilled.
So but that's what we need, right? That,
yeah.
Yeah, they, and if you have to convince them, or we have to convince them to see the world a different way, I've hired the wrong person.
Yeah.
Right? So this is going to be a much narrower focused search. I see it as maybe somebody that's been a division level, a division level kind of CISO, maybe at a Cisco or an HP or a big place like that, and has kind of got some creds, but wants to go to a Fortune 500 company as the next step in their career. You know, I don't, God knows I don't want to bring in a government bureaucrat. That's like the last thing we need in here, right? I want to bring somebody in who gets engineered products, because I think that's so much more our, that's sort of our DNA as a company, you know, and I think it's hard to fake that, right? It's hard, and if we get somebody in who doesn't bring some of that, then what we're going to be is like, well, it seems like a really good person. I hope they can adapt to our, boy, that's like asking for a lot coming into job. We kind of want to get somebody who clearly gets that and is on that career path. So any thoughts you have around that, shoot me some notes, send me some ideas. That's the job description I put together, that's the intent. I'm going to have 50 people try to pull me off that because they know someone who's great. I know somebody who's great. I'm sure we can all go have dinner together and celebrate our new friendship, but that doesn't mean it's a person who should be in this job, right? And I think people don't understand that aren't somewhat familiar with security that there are very different kinds of security, right? There's in healthcare, it's all compliance and governance. It's like, am I following all the healthcare codes and HIPAA standards and patient confidentiality, all that stuff, right? So it's more of a you know, we're going to respect, you know, what one doctor or physician's group can see and another physician. Hey, fine, that's great. Go out and do that stuff, right? That's different than finance and financials, which has all the damn government and New York regulated banking stuff, right? We don't need that. Right? We need people who understand how IP drifts off and gets lost, particularly code, right? It's really hard. It's really, really hard to manage. So I kind of, I'm going to need your help in that as we go out there and look at people and talk to people, and probably people in this room can help in that process. Okay, so that's what I'm committed to. You can hold me to the standard of, number one, that I stick with that principled behavior, that I yield somewhere along the way, and number two, did I get the right person? Which hopefully I will. Okay, and I think, you know, appreciate all the work Phil did in getting us to where we are, because I think we couldn't have gotten here without some leadership. All right, but now we're ready for the next phase, and I think it's going to be an interesting, because the company is changing so fast, and we keep buying businesses, and I can tell you we're looking at a couple more, because I got emails over the weekend. Hey, I think you've seen some of those emails, right? It's going to keep coming. And the good news is they're asking us for your opinions. What did you guys do, and how do you look at this? So if we can see it coming, then we can jump in early. But it's going to take a head of steam and a stiff spine to go in there and do business with these folks and say there's going to be a time frame to become compliant, and beyond that, we're going to get disconnected from the friggin' network.
Are you feeling that we're getting the support now from your peers to be able to do that with some of these new acquisitions? Because we're still fighting that with some of the old ones.
I think what we're getting is a lot more respect from being a cooperative, co-investing organization around the kind of work. That comment about what Eduardo did the other day was amazing, like the work he's doing. I think us jumping in and being willing to be in the Keystone Cops episode here, you know, the Keystone episode, trying to help them with that is helpful. And I think a whole bunch of stuff we've done with Anthony's team.
I was thinking Keystone Cops from the
Yeah, right.
No, you're talking about itself.
Keystone
itself.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying Keystone Cops.
And this is a good analogy.
That's
why
I was
using the name.
Just trying
to ironic they use that name.
Yeah. So I think we're getting much more appreciated for our role. I think the noise has settled down. I mean, we just shoved agents up their wazoo because we had to, because we had deployed nothing. Okay, so that's settled out some, right? We're kind of over that. They've sort of yielded in from that you can't do that to I hate it when you do that to okay, I know you're going to do it. And they're sort of over it now for the most part, right? They know we need to do this. So I think we've gotten to a really good place, but we still need to be fraternal when it comes to doing things that are engineering workflows. And I think that's the biggest hill. I think we have a lot more credibility than when we first started. Are we ever going to be friends? No, we're going to be persona non grata to Yancey until the sun melts. We really are.
We just got to get them to acknowledge that you bring somebody on, that they are the target. The minute you announce them, everybody and their brother is going after them.
That's going to be a spear phishing.
You know?
Right?
And so they bring more risk to us, and we bring more risk to them at the same time. We've got to be able to get in there quickly.
So I think we've earned some creds, which are really helpful. But we still got a lot of work to do. And it's the more we progress with teams that are out there and we show that we get to a working arrangement, the harder it is for the remaining teams to make a case why they can't work with us. And I think we made some good progress there. Right? So it's a long road. Nobody does. When you talk about changing engineering workflows at that level, I mean, that's a 4 or 5 year journey for most companies to be able to get to that point. We just started really late. Because the engineering groups felt like they could do whatever they wanted, and under really, and I'm not trying to blame anybody, but I mean, when I started here, Joel didn't care about any of this crap. Joel's view was, hey, we're going to do what the hell we're going to do. We're just going to do what we're going to do, and then you need to protect us, but we're going to do what we're going to do. Okay, but I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah.
So we're definitely no longer in that situation. So. But we still have pockets of resistance out there that we're going to need to deal with, right? So we're going to bring new ones in, probably, but I think we get better at rooting that out and moving on. So I think we've got really, really good creds now to do that. But still a lot of work ahead. So if you all thought you were going to be bored, So, I mean, that's kind of the way I'd like to see this agenda go forward. The other thing is, if you all have suggestions for optimization in the interim, Mike's here, Jeff's here, shoot me a note. I'm not hard and fast over the way we're structured and what people are doing. I think we got a lot of really good talent. We have a lot of good seasoned talent on the team. I am very much willing to hear, doesn't mean I'll agree, but I'm willing to hear suggestions for how we optimize the roles and the people. Remember, we're pretty serious on the extended staff about the rotation program. So we set a goal of 20%. And it was very unscientific. What it was meant to be is pretty comfortable that we can make the goal and then see if we get better over time. So the goal in my mind, it would have been the stretch goal, would have been the 30% rotations. And the reason I say that is our turnover each year is going to be just under 10%. Those are all rotations by definition, new person in a new role. So that's already getting 8 to 10%. So what that says is if I add another 10 or 12%, if I do 10% rotations beyond turnover, that means everybody changes jobs once every 10 years. Hello, I hope we could do that, right? So you probably should do at least 1 over 5 or probably another 20%. So we probably somewhere between 25 and 30% of new job rotations should be the goal for our organization. So that applies to everybody. And when I say rotations, if I think about it, can be a substantially changed duty within a team construct. So somebody could cross over different skill sets within, let's say, security. Mm-hmm. Somebody could try managing a group versus being individual. There's different ways to get new career experience in there. Or you may want to go out or have somebody come in. Hey, I want to go over here and do an architecture job versus a security job for a couple years. Totally good with however we want to leverage our resources and keep people moving through, right? So we should be able to do that. I don't think because we don't have the CISO in a role. This actually is an interesting time because Mike's looking at it, Jeff's looking at it, I'm looking at it. If we think we can tweak and move some things around to improve performance, fine. Whoever's going to come in as a CISO is not going to go, I don't know why Mike or Jeff or Miller did that. No, they're going to come in and say, okay, what's the mission, boss? I get it. I'm your person to go do this stuff. Can't wait to get started. Let's roll, okay? So we have an opportunity to do those things, okay? So the only thing is, Angie can't say she doesn't want to do IDAS because I
guess that's kind of awesome. You own it.
You are off limits. Nobody touched Angie's role.
There's no rotation on you.
No, I'm just kidding. If you came to me and said, I really want to do something else, I'd say, I'd close the door and say, hell no. No, I would hear you out.
You know, she was a people when she came here.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why she's
had a conversation one day and I found out she had a technical background. I was like, so why don't you come do identity? And she goes, I don't know anything about identity. I was like, it won't take you a week. Now look at her.
She's like, she loses me two sentences in now when we start talking about it. She explained to me why Okta couldn't provide any value, and I was like, lost two sentences. Like, you just say, Miller, it ain't gonna work. Just that's all you gotta say. So, okay. So anyhow,
we hired her and Pat on the same day.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
And then she left. They were contractors. She left. She came back. She was a PM for us for a while, and then flipped over technology. Just cool. Just as a technologist for what, 6 months, and then ran with it. Just took off from there.
So anyhow. We do want to keep that going. So, if you all have suggestions, you think, you know, we're here for. I'm not going to try to profess it. Any of us are going to get a micromanage. You're going to try to tweak all kinds of. But if you do think there are some things we have an opportunity, it's a good time to, you know, to peel the onion back and take a look at it and say, hey, I think we could. If we did these things, we'd be more effective, right? So I think we're all on the same mission here and want the company to be successful. So anyhow, with that, I want to go around the table. Questions? Anything that I said that you go, my God, I can't believe you said that.
I'd like to start by saying I think I can speak for the rest of the team where, you know, Mike and Jeff have done a really nice job of coming in and not trying to change everything.
Right.
You know, they've come in and gone, okay, show us what you're doing. Yep. Let us help you figure out if that's the right way. But they haven't come in and tried to make it all different. I think they've been really supportive of everything we've been working on. So I applaud the joint effort was a good move. They're a good fit for what we're doing.
I would second that. Just the addition of clear expectations is always helpful for a team. And, you know, I don't doubt any of the expectations that Mike has for our day-to-day and what we're doing, you know, across this team, so.
Well, you know, you all have, and I didn't say it when I was talking about it either, but you all have a difficult job in the sense there's very few organizations in IT or in the company where you can have this incoming stuff that you don't see that you got to jump on with the threats, okay, in the incidents that come up. So, you know, I mean, you could argue that Bill Berg's organization at Endicor, oh my God, we got a pre-build, we got a stage inventory. It's like a cluster that happens at the end of every corner. Everybody goes, their hair on fire, and then it's over. Okay.
We don't choose our priorities, the bad guys do.
Well, that's right. And it can be any time, during the corner, day or night, weekend, holiday, right, and it comes up. So there's an unknown factor in when you have to ramp up and deal with incidents, too. So that's clearly, I mean, we had that a week ago, right? So, you know, I'm empathetic to the best laid plans are still going to get disrupted at times by the urgencies of what we have to deal with. So we have to plan for a little flex in there when those things occur. But, you know, I appreciate your comments on that, too. That's good.
I would say having the operational piece more in place as far as tracking projects and just having an overall vision of what is happening in the organization, which Mike has put back into place, has been nice.
An engineering mindset back in the mix. It's been nice.
Yep.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, again, and Mike's really hands-on with that. I mean, he gets how this stuff works, right? And that's where, when you're in a technology-driven company like this, where your partners are technologists, you better be able to play in that in that game, right?
Yep.
And you know, you've heard me use that metaphor, probably the dog bone that we live in, right? The dog bone. On this big chunk of the dog bone, you got sales, and on this big chunk of the dog bone, you got engineering, and in the middle, you got all this other stuff that connects it, which is us and finance and marketing and all the, quite frankly, overhead functions. Right? You got to build stuff better than your competitors, and you got to sell stuff better than your competitors, or you're going to be out of business. And if you look at it from a headcount standpoint, it's definitely true. You got a couple thousand people here, a couple thousand people here, and a bunch of stragglers in the middle. Right? So, you know, sales to us, salespeople are they're all mercenaries. Let's face it. They're only renting the badge, right? That's what they're all mercenaries out there. Engineers, not so much. Engineers get really dyed blue into that NetApp design.
They're prima donnas.
Huh?
They're prima donnas.
Prima donnas
and mercenaries.
Yeah. Mercenaries, prima donnas.
Yep.
And they both bring I don't really give a crap what you IT people say. We got our own way of seeing the world. So they're hard. They're both hard groups to work with.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, the engineers, the truth always matters in how things are designed. In the sales force, the truth rarely
matters. They don't
care. It's whatever fits my
needs.
It's
whatever they
today,
can sell.
Because I'm mercenary. And it's all my sales incentive comp, my SIC, that drives my behavior. I don't ever let facts or the truth get in the way. I just need to hit my quota. And engineers are like, oh my God, no, truth is, I've got to design, it's got to work. The specs, the requirements have to be met, right? You know? So we're dealing with that community, and that's hard for a lot of people to deal with, right? It's a hard bunch of customers. So, good points about that. And being disciplined, I think, is important when you're dealing with that community, for sure.
For sure.
I don't know. In most of what we do, too, I don't see the field being as much of a threat. They kind of, can they be fished? Probably, very easily. Are they necessarily, they don't have a lot of IP at their disposal. You could argue that some sales engineers might, some SEs at times.
I would say some SEs might,
But
customer lists is about the biggest thing that they've got access to.
Look, customer lists, pricing, all that stuff feels like Social Security numbers and other stuff like that to me. That's never gonna kill your company. Why? Because I can tell you, our competitors know what we're charging for products as well as our own salespeople. Right, because they're competing. They're winning deals and losing deals on a daily basis. And half of them are going to the other company. They're leaving at the end of the other quarter. You know, somebody goes to EMC. Somebody comes from Pure. Somebody goes to Nutanix. I mean, they all know. It's an incestuous business in the selling ranks of this stuff, right? Engineers I worry more about because they're in the mechanics of how all this stuff works, how the sausage is really made, you know. So, anyhow, hey, your turn.
My turn?
Yeah. You get to talk more. You can't just talk about your run. You got to talk about it.
Or the rum.
Or the, oh, yeah. I thought
it was
rum.
Or the rum. Not the rum. The rum or the run.
Sorry, still hungover. I'm good.
All right. It's cool.
Yeah, I think shoring up some of the process and the operationalization is really going to help the team.
Okay. And if you get some specific thoughts on what that means to you operationally, share that with us.
The strongest or the most impactful thing that's happening right now is the hammer coming down for the demand and project life cycle, that we're really getting back into using the tool much more fully than we had maybe over the last year or two.
Okay.
So it's okay. Going to be a little bit of a change up. There's been more heavy usage for the projects that you see in the weekly meetings, but there's going to be a lot more.
So should I use an example of like one of those pen tests we talked about coming in there as sort of a cyclical?
Well, no, those are already in there. I mean, those have been in there, maybe not as robustly as they could be.
Okay.
But I would also like to see, like we were talking earlier with the PM, I would like to see a stronger representation of that particular life cycle in ServiceNow as well.
Well, the tier one, tier two stuff we've been fairly consistent with.
Yeah.
Everything tier three and
it just sort of slides on, right?
Yeah, it's just been kind of in the sausage making, as it were. Now it's getting back in structure.
God bless you.
So that's we were happy there. We got kind of, with the changes in IT and the use of ServiceNow, we got kind of moved out of the tool.
Yeah.
And so Mike's kind of brought us back into the tool with a lot of that, which is great. It gives us a lot more visibility into the smaller stuff that happens.
Yeah. And at least there, if you know things are getting punted downstream because we don't have the coverage, fine, at least we can quantify that.
Exactly.
We know how things are slipping and what we're able to deal with and what we're not.
A little less reactionary.
Yeah,
to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good example. Yeah. Okay.
I feel like I still don't have a great hold on our new GSS procurement process. So,
yeah.
My
GSS. Yeah.
It was okay before where we did the contracting and then the PO, and now it's contracting sort of PO sort of contracting PO. So the sandwich approach is to me a little bit more slippery.
Okay.
So I don't have great timelines on it, and there's a lot more back and forth with GSS and with.
Is it something they can help clean up?
No, most of them are really good. There's just a lot more. Like running back and forth,
saying,
do you have this? Make sure this person's in it. I'm like, okay, I just.
Yeah.
So it's until we really get really used to it. There's just a little bit more to keep track of, and it's just.
Takes time, takes cycles. It's adding. It's at least for the short term, it's an add-on to the churn, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I understand why it's there, and I get it, but it's.
Okay. All right, thanks. That's helpful. Ms. Angie?
So, I mean, I like the more measured approach that we're taking. I will just say that the last 2 weeks have been a challenge just because you come back from the break, you've got tons of things to do, and then you've got this additional upheaval, and now you've got another 5 extra meetings that you didn't plan to go to try and get everything
organized. Yeah, we'll try not to just meet you guys to death. All right. Part of that is the churn here, including this meeting, right? So I'm not trying to overload you all, but
when is your next update to Bill? Do you know when he on the schedule next?
I do not know.
I can tell you.
She just knows not today.
There's a lot of movement going on in that space. So
I hate to say this, but at some point we're gonna get this on the cadence of
the 10th of February.
Regular reviews as an IT organization, not just as a security organization, when we get to the point.
Yeah.
Right. So we're gonna need to do more than just every 4 or 6 weeks or something we talk about it. But let's wait till we hit that point where we're trying to convert these apps. And
Is it class one, class two? Which one class is that one?
It's class one.
Probably.
So it should come up at MHR every month then?
No, most of the security panels that we update to build, they don't make it.
I'd rather have them on separate cadence.
So you want to have a Monday cadence?
Okay. No, not even Monday. Maybe we do it as a single subject.
We should do a single subject on that, not wait for February. You got too many.
We're beginning to create enough.
Figure out how you want to do that. Let's get Eric in there, Montgomery, and get it on our regular review schedule. And then it doesn't even have to sit on the Monday review thing. It can just do it. It's such a large thing that touches so many different groups. I'd like to have it stand outside.
And it'd be nice to get some of those leaders from the other teams into that meeting so we can have that conversation in a bigger group.
Yeah, I mean, we consider this the foundational year. And I would say, you know, we dug the footings, you look across the field, you don't really see very much, but we're actually getting some foundation up, seeing above, and we're going, we're impacting more people. We need more resourcing from people. And so that's kind of where we sit right now.
Well, and you're going to get on, when you get that schedule, that these things need to roll in, you can't afford to start getting behind.
Well, and that's,
or you'll never.
That's what I'm concerned with now, is that the holidays and the changes and everything, I'm afraid they're getting up against the wall here shortly if we don't get some visibility.
I would agree. I have some concerns. And then, I'm a little worried right now.
And then some of us can shame the participants who are not participating as aggressively. I don't really want you and your team to be the bad guys or gals in this, right? I'd rather they come up in the meeting and they're behind and the schedule's read, and then allows me and other people to ask embarrassing questions. That's why they're not there.
I think you drop you don't need to be doing to Linda and ask you to get on Bill's schedule and make sure that the other leaders that need to be there are there as well.
Yeah, because I mean, everybody in the organization, plus some people outside the organization, need to play ball with this.
We actually have a Syracuse tomorrow, 4 p.m. If you're
I
would be more than happy to have a guest speaker.
I have an IT workforce strategy meeting with Ron and Anne Marie and Justin, so I can't do it. So, but if you would care to move it, I could do it. I could do it at 5. I could do it some other time. But you decide.
I don't have
to. Or you can give me a quick brief.
Or maybe I'll state that the next one will have a guest participating, so let's get our ducks in a row this one.
Don't wait a month.
That's a good idea, but don't wait a month.
Oh yeah, no, we won't wait a month. We'll ask to do that sooner.
I told you before, I don't want people getting behind on this, right? Because it's touching too many different entities, too many different applications, too many different players. Everybody will have a really good excuse why they don't comply with the schedule, and that'll just push us back and back. Mm-hmm. So
by good excuse, you mean I don't want to?
This happened, we did an acquisition, and now I don't have time to do this, or, you know, Miller wanted these other features in this platform, so what had to get funded out was the...
We'll blame it on CPQ.
No problem.
It's usually Cloud One's the one we blame it on. Now that you're in the meeting,
you'll be right there with the CEO. You'll be right there with the CEO, so we'll make it
up. I'll get it pulled from.
That does bring up a good point, though, Peg. You need to send a note out to the team. They can no longer blame all the problems on Cloud One when they were doing updates to Bill. Now that Mike's in the meeting,
he's a good point. Mike's in the meeting.
He's taking it fast.
I just want to give a time check. We're 5 minutes to the hour, and we still have three other people.
We still have three other people.
I don't get to go.
All right. We've heard enough from you.
Yeah,
enough. And we'll continue to.
Just kidding. I love you.
Time check. Mike,
well done. Thank you.
I think, you know, spending enough quality time on strategy.
Yeah.
You know, that was something that surprised me here was what are we driving towards? And what are our 18-month, 24-month, and 36-month goals? Yeah. You know, Derek and I went out to a lot of business units, ingested a lot of material, but weren't necessarily able to turn around and say, well, here's what we think we should be doing to help protect IP. What are you doing? I think the more we work on the strategy, right, it helps us do the planning, helps us turn off tools that don't provide a lot of capability.
Yeah.
And there's capabilities that we see from Cisco and Pan and other people. You evaluate it, but if you don't know what you're evaluating it for...
Against what the use case or... Right.
Does it have value for what we're trying to achieve? It might have value, but if our roadmap is headed right and this tool heads left, we don't get the tool. So I think we should spend more time on strategy with the team members
all want to come up with a model where we periodically come back and kind of review that, I'd be thrilled to do that because I think it's really interesting. That stuff's fun. I just don't feel like we've had enough of it, right? And first of all, it's really, as we talked about, hard to articulate, but even that little exercise this week of tying in what we're working on to NIST framework categories and scores. I don't know if it's 100% correct, but it's certainly directionally a step forward to be able to map this.
It was repeatable, and you know that was the biggest thing. You could repeat that process, and it was objective.
That's right.
It wasn't our personal
measure. You're not doing this. You're finding a way to tie these things back to those.
But the other business units, you know, that Derek and I have talked to, it would be nice to share strategy. It would be nice to know that 60% of our products are going to be cloud-based in the next 2 years.
That
helps us then turn around and say, here's the capabilities that we should be adding, junking these other ones. So more of that cross-functional strategy talk, and then down from, you know, the sea level down, what is coming that direction. I don't think we got a ton of that before. Okay.
And by the way, Pete had a really cool initial submission, and quite frankly, as much on me as anybody, and we do anything with it, but he put together a model and said, hey, here's a way of identifying scenarios or threat actors, and we should then back in to preventive cures and tools and platforms to look at different scenarios for threats to the business, right? So we kind of took a first pass at that. We need to go and dust that off and bring it back too and say, these are sort of bad outcomes. And if it's a bad outcome practiced by some bad actor, how do we protect against it happening? Like, if this is the stuff you don't want to have happen, what do I have to do upstream to prevent that, right? So I think there's different ways of looking at that than say, okay, well, we better do these three or four things if we want to prevent that outcome, right? So I think it's really a great point, and I think I've heard that now several times here, which is cool.
We shouldn't be in love with tools. We should be in love with the capabilities that the tool provides.
What they do for us.
Because those tools will be replaced by other
cooler,
faster, newer tools
through
some period of time.
And that's right.
That's the part of that larger deck that they're working on now is breaking it out into capabilities so that you can sit there and go, okay, in Echo, in this particular space, we have this capability that's lacking, and this tool might fit it, but these three others might as well. So get out of the tool conversation and more into the capability.
Well, and keep in mind, very one of those tools, there has to be a human being that grabs onto the handles.
Exactly.
That's the other thing.
We'd rather have one or two tools that had broad scope than 15 that had narrow, that we had to have 15 sets of people managing them, though.
That's right, but in the security space, you also know that the venture cap companies are trying to fund as many of these things to entice everyone to go buy.
43 a day.
I can't tell whether there's more new security tools popping up daily or more new marketing tools popping up daily.
No, there's a bunch of security tools.
Freaking marketing stuff and customer sensing and, you know, oh my God, there's more marketing sacks.
They're exactly opposites. I mean, the marketing stuff is going out there and doing all the looking at the data to figure out what to do with it. The security tools are trying to catch the thing
and
looking at the data.
That's good.
You got a whole minute and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
Derek, you're in charge. You got the floor.
So really, I guess the biggest thing, the easiest way to describe it is after a decade at IBM complaining about too much process and too much structure. After a year here, I was a man dying in the desert, right? Over a glass of water. So hearing that Mike has an engineering focus and wants some of that rigor and structure, I honestly told my girlfriend that it was comforting.
That's
a good thing. Now, one of the things that I'm hopeful in this transition will be that we break down some of the two sides of the house. As a security practitioner focused on application security, I don't have two policies, one that's product and one that's in-house. I have one policy that applies to both, and everybody agrees to that. Yeah. It seems that's not really the case now, and so I remain
hopeful.
Give
me an example, give me something I can say.
Well, none of Matt Baldwin's team is currently running any of our management tools. They're currently in a bypass.
Gotcha. They do no harm.
Yes, right. Iceland. I have yet to actually meet anybody from Iceland because they're apparently not very friendly.
They have
that's the whole thing. It's those kinds of things, right? And then the other side of it is we've got penetration testing and static code testing and dynamic testing going on the product side. And then over here on the in-house side, only in Cloud One are we doing that.
Yeah,
so we're not consistently applying those kinds of things, right?
Agreed.
I'd like to see some of that book
Your experiences at IBM, how would that work?
It was all one. Our way or the highway. I mean, the 3 years I spent in the CISO's office, that's exactly what it was we had one set of policies.
But you have clearly engineering teams, product line teams. How was that structured that those teams were not renegade teams? I mean, were they brought under through senior leadership edicts across the company that were consistent? You know, what was your experience?
Well, yeah, so the blue wash, which was the vernacular for we acquired you, time for you to get the chip.
Yeah,
the blue wash.
Right. Was blue wash was you were given a period, depending on the size of the acquisition, N number of months.
You were going
to. And at the end of it, you had converted your stack to our stack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't this, oh, you got to do willy-nilly whatever you wanted, and you got to continue. You know, we're up to now 19 different development languages that I have to be at least tangentially aware of.
Yeah.
Right? At IBM, it was five. Period.
Across the whole language.
You will be assimilated.
You will be assimilated. Resistance is useless.
Do you think that'll carry through? Because I don't think for a minute that'll carry through to Red Hat.
No.
Not for a minute. I think Red Hat will have full autonomy for as long as you and I are talking about.
Well, and that's possible, right? And the Lotus did for a while.
Mm.
Tivoli did for a while.
Tivoli's a great example.
You know, those are both, and Maximo was brought into Tivoli. But yeah, over time, I mean, even Maximo, who was a huge company and ended up being 70% of the Tivoli portfolio by the end of it, 3 years in, they were converted. They've been blue washed. Resistance is futile.
When we went out to SolidFire.
That's the slogan.
When we went out to SolidFire's facility last February, right?
Yeah.
The second month here, we heard us and them.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what NetApp does.
They really
yeah.
say
it. There's a lot of us and them. And so I'm making notes, you know.
And you said, the us being you guys who don't sell anything, and the them being NetApp who generates all the revenue, is that the two groups you're talking
about? But QStack, same way. Matt refers to QStack and NetApp.
It's like, really? Okay, that's, by the way, that's really good insight into the headset there. And the lack of discipline we have as an executive team to try to enforce those behaviors,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I think we're getting to a point where we can be a little bit more aggressive in exerting that posture. I think it was harder early on in our effort because we had so many holes in our stack and what we were doing. Now I think we're pretty close to a level where we can stand on some good operational principles and go, okay, time out, that's no longer going to fly. But I think, you know, when we had AWS doing whatever the hell they wanted to do with our technology, it's hard to go back to our engineering groups and beat them with the whip. So I think we've done some things that allow us to stand on principle a little more than where we were a year or two ago. Those are great points, though. It says some about their mindset that they don't have to be part of the larger community, right? That's what it really says.
No, yeah, outreach connection, right? That kind of
stuff. I always, by the way, previous companies I've been at, it's always been that there was a time frame to be assimilated
mm-hmm.
for acquisition, okay? Mm-hmm. And even Cisco would tell you, again, this is going back a couple years, but Cisco would tell you at that time of the acquisitions they had done, there were really only two that were big enough and independent enough that they let operate outside that slipstream. One was the modem company? Linksys was mm-hmm. one of them. And the other was the set-top box companies. Scientific Atlanta.
Yeah.
Those were like...
Who they ended up getting rid of,
right? So there were only really those two that they didn't pull into that structured model. And again, having some period of time where you have to become compliant. A reasonable
right.
period of time. And the key there is everybody on the management team goes, that's how we operate. This isn't up for negotiation.
Right.
This is how we operate. Here we have kind of a bit of a double standard. Well, you know, yeah, they're kind of new, and we don't want to upset them.
Just want to get along.
Yeah, McAfee has a guidance in there. I mean, they will be managed by EPO within 6 months after they acquire them.
Yeah,
period.
Well,
that's the first thing they do, get them under